So yeah, I don't think I watched it until like earlier this decade. And you know when you like, I don't know, I've read a lot of books and a lot of books that have been made into films or plays that have been made into films, which is becoming more and more common. And invariably I'm disappointed. It's just one of those things. They just never really seem to translate that well. But I guess because this is a play, it was kind of a bit more open to a movie interpretation or mini series this was. But I was really pleasantly surprised with how fucking amazing a production this was. Everything from the cast. I mean, fuck, what an all-star cast. And this is so like, it's so common now for kind of, I guess, big time movie actors to be in these kinds of productions. Like I would liken this to a kind of Netflix style, you know, mini
production
that we see all the time. But this is 2003, so this is really, really long time before all this kind of stuff happened. So it was quite unusual for these kind of big time actors to do something like this for like HBO, not a big screen film. And I wonder, I've actually always wondered what drew them to this. And I know it was an award-winning play. So it was a very well-known play. It wasn't like an unknown little thing. So they were probably aware of it, but I always have wondered, you know, how they managed to get such big time stars in this miniseries. It's amazing.
Well, from my understanding, that's down to the director they got for this, Mike Nichols, who most people would probably know better for making The Graduate for Dustin Hoffman.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Which is also a play, right?
I still haven't seen it. I honestly don't know. But yeah. But Mike Nichols, from my understanding, had worked with Pacino, Emma Thompson, and Streep before. And, like, his, I guess, like, name brand value and upon, like, first meeting writer Tony Kushner, like, it was immediate, like, yes, this is the guy we want doing this.
Cool.
And then he kind of brought that in. But also, like, what fascinates me about, like, the casting here isn't just, like, the big names. It's also the names that would become big after this. Mm-hmm. Like Jeffrey Wright, who I absolutely love in this thing. I just don't have enough good things to say, quite frankly.
Yeah, right.
And also Patrick Wilson, who is legit one of my favorite actors. Like, I have yet to see a performance of his, like, even in stuff I genuinely don't like, that hasn't worked.
You know it's a good actor when you know it's a good actor when you're watching someone in something that you hate, but you're still like, you're still really good.
Yeah, and like, admittedly, I know Patrick Wilson more for like his more recent, like, He stars in a lot of horror movies, like Insidious and in the Tall Grass, and he also played Night Owl in Watchmen, which is like one of my favorite superheroes.
Yeah,
quite frankly, I just love him in that.
Cool.
So seeing him as basically you know, someone learning to, like, you know, accept the fact that they are gay, it's a bit like crack for me. I'm just like, yes, give me more of this.
Yeah, right. That's interesting. He was I think he started as a what do you call him? Like a theater actor?
Yeah, he was mostly known for doing like on Broadway musicals before getting to movies.
So that potentially that's I'm sure that's probably how he ended up in this. Because he has that kind of, and I noticed when I watched it, I only know that because when I was watching it, I was like, he was so incredible, but it really felt like, not that over theatre acting, but definitely somebody who was pretty well, like, stage-trained. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, there is definitely a distinction between, like, theatre acting and cinematic, specifically because, like, in theatre, you have to belt it all the way to the back row, whereas...
Yeah.
Cinema, you could actually like edit things together and have them a bit closer.
Yeah, but I still felt like he was that sort of, you know, I don't know, he had that vibe about him. It was sort of, it suits this anyway, like that sort of, that style of acting, this kind of production. So, did you rewatch the whole 6 hours?
Not only did I do that, and this really is... this really is a testament to just how freaking good this is. Yeah. I watched the whole 6 hour block in one sitting.
Oh my God.
Which with someone with raging ADHD is quite the feat. But then again, it might be one of the breeziest 6 hour sits I've ever had, because it's just like Tony Kushner's writing is... he's like one of those writers that makes me feel self-conscious. Like, I wish I could write this good. Like, just like all the little touches, like with the scene where Pryor Walter reveals the sarcoma on his chest, and he says, like, you know, the wine dark kiss of the angel of death. It's like, it's not just that he gets across all these really like heavy, just like literal, like world-shattering emotions, but he finds just the right wording to fit the mood, like whether it's supposed to be like really poetic and majestic, or if it's just Jeffrey Wright's Belie saying, like, you're so full of piping hot crap that the sound of your name draws flies, which is like one of the sassiest things ever put to film. I love it. And it's not even all just like, you know, the pretty stuff. Like, when it comes to Roy Cohn,
yeah,
like, even beyond Al Pacino actually, like, managing to deliver without going just full, like, woo-ah, just, like, you know, but it's, like, when, like, that scene where Roy Cohn is basically describing the body politic as, well, like, the human body, like, you know, bowel movement and blood red meat, this stinks, this is politics, like... Yes. Damn, that like a politics on its own is really damn ugly, regardless of who you support. But in that wording, it's just like it really drives it home.
Oh,
it's like, especially with like how slimy Roy Cohn, both in this film and in real life, he was.
Yeah. I know. And even I found that even his like denial itself was really political. Felt like, do you know what I mean? Like he almost came at his own personal situation with that same kind of political
the you know, political spin.
Yes.
And the thing is that, like, well, considering what I've said in terms of like how, for instance, like the word gay is used in like hip hop circles, it's really weird that like seeing like another instance where it's like homosexual is being used to describe not exactly itself, but more like the perception surrounding it. Like with his kind of like hilariously awful declaration of like, I'm not a homosexual. I'm a heterosexual man who fucks around with guys.
Yeah.
It's just like, that is...
Is that not political spin? Right, exactly. If that's not political spin, I don't know what is. And even just, when he's talking to his doctor.
And actually, to further that point, that whole moment of him, like, insisting because of, like, the perception and, you know, his political persona, needing to insist that he doesn't have AIDS, he has liver cancer, and he's not gay. He's a heterosexual that sleeps with men. It's one of those moments that really helps highlight that as much as the right keeps insisting that the left is too politically correct, the right is just as guilty, if not more so.
I know. No, it's very clever. It's all that those lines that you're talking about and stuff. Like when I first read it, it was almost like it's a play, but it's almost like poetry, a lot of it. It's like the guy was a poet, but he couldn't just settle for just writing a poem. He had to write like a whole two-part play. And there's so much of this, like well, we haven't even touched on the whole kind of the angel, the imagery that he drew, that he used, and in the movie you sort of, you know, you get to see it physically, but in the play, I mean, and like reading it, it was just you had to imagine it just through his writing, and that's how wonderfully.
I'm really glad that you brought up the angels, because like that on its own is like an infinitely fascinating part of this thing.
Yeah.
For me, as someone who is LGBT, who is part of, you know, the,
yeah,
was it the alphabet people, for people who genuinely just need excuses to be a dick. But regardless, I really love like the angels for two main reasons. One, because it like they highlight like the theological like focus of the scene, which has like equal parts like Judaism, which comes from Tony Kushner's own background,
yeah,
and the Church of Latter-day Saints, which is basically the American religion that doesn't, yeah, involve money,
yeah, yeah,
considering its origins, and like the way that those two kind of play off each other in the showing of like the angel, you know, the New Testament that Pryor has to read through those like stone glasses, which itself is a reference to the origin of Mormonism.
Yeah.
And of course, well, the other part is how horny the angels are, like inherently, like from like the angels' explanation of how basically God fucked all the angels and that's how the universe came into being, right down to the sex scene between the angel and Pryor, and what I am going to consider the sex scene between the angel and Joe's mother, because they're filmed exactly the same way. And the scene with,
yeah,
like the first sex scene has probably like my favorite acting moment from Justin Kirk as Pryor, where, yeah, where it's just like the angel's like, angelic ejaculate, and he's just like, oh shit. It's like Justin Kirk on his own, even like without bringing the rest of the all-star or soon to be all-star cast into the equation, makes this thing worth watching. But yeah, for some reason, that's the one moment where I'm just like, I don't know how perfect you can get, but that's pretty damn close.
Yeah. I know, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. I'm really, again, like I'm thrilled that we've, you know, revisited something. Go on.
Sorry, it's just like I'm like fit to bursting with things to say about.
Yeah, keep going. I'm just thrilled. This has been this had such a huge impact on my life for my early 20s, and coming back to it now, it's really nice. It's really cool.
I think the thing that like I love the absolute most about this, like even more so than the fact that I honestly wish I could trade for Tony Kushner's creative juices, I could write half this good. It's also like the fact that like the film at its core is a gay romance story,
yeah,
where all of the like the notions of just, you know, like, you know, Lewis not being able to deal with the fact that Pryor has AIDS, and him just being, and like the two of them just being like, I wish we could, you know, turn back the clock and just before all this happened, back when we were happy.
Yeah.
And then taking that same conceit, like doom is on the horizon and we need to, you know, we feel a need to turn the clock back, and applying that to the political scene at the time with Reaganism, McCarthyism, Roy Cohn's, you know, extremely duplicitous actions, and even applying that to like, you know, the universe at large, and the idea that just like, in order to restore what once was in terms of like God still being around, which itself is kind of a, I think kind of like a biting reference to the idea of just like the mere existence of LGBT people,
yep,
without anything else involved, is such an affront to these people that are like, we need to go back to when you didn't exist. Yeah. Which is going to be a tough thing to do because we've always been here, bitch. It's just like, and like for as, you know, as like world shaking as it gets, you know, right to the point of just like, you know, Pryor being this prophet that is being told to basically tell the rest of the world to stop moving, stop progressing, and his death at the hands of the disease is meant to be like the delivery system for that message. And he's just like, that's not how we work. That's not how anything works.
No, exactly. Like, it's not how anything works, yeah.
And like, even with all that going on, like, the actual, like, true drama behind, like, you know, the friction between Pryor and Lewis's relationship, the insanely poignant relationship between Joe and his wife, and just how much of, like, a sham marriage has turned her into a, you know, hallucinating, like, drug addict housewife. And even with, like, how much I genuinely, like, felt good at, like, Joe being able to accept that part of himself. Like, when it gets to, like, the final scene between him and Lewis, where Lewis just lays it all out on the table on how much Joe has, like, really followed in Roy Cohn's footsteps for the worst.
Yeah.
And, like, as much as I, like, feel a certain sense of, yeah, he's being himself, I'm like, oh, there's also that part of him, too. And it's just like, and it's like all these things, like no matter how grandiose it gets, and hell, even for how, like, potentially misguided it could get, like, how the whole thesis of the film is that progress is painful but necessary, which in light of, like, let's say, American colonialism or the British colonialism that gave birth to that, I would heavily argue against that idea specifically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, as far as, like, social progress, spiritual progress, you know, interpersonal progress, that itself is needed. And in another amazing writing bit, the scene where Joe's wife, Joe's beard pretty much, goes to the Mormon Museum and the statue comes to life and explains change as, like, God cutting someone open and playing around with their organs. It's like,
yeah,
that's how it feels.
Yeah.
That's how any kind of change or alteration to what we consider the norm to be. I mean, that is effectively how it felt adjusting to lockdown, and I still haven't gotten through that yet.
Yeah, I know. It's certainly made me reflect on, you know, quite a lot of what's going on in the world right now, and the types of, you know, political rhetoric that's getting around and from certain countries, and some of the, you know, those exactly what you just pointed out, like those kinds of universal type kind of ideas, and that we're really being shaken up right now. It's another kind of, I guess, turning point, a real turning point we're going through right now as humanity in general, which I guess, you know, in 1985, it probably felt quite similar for a lot of people who were living, you know, with this disease and with this new normal, I guess, in a way, that nobody knew whether they were ever going to find a cure or a, you know, even a management for it or a vaccine or anything like that. Like,
or if the society around them was even able to admit that it was an actual thing, considering AIDS itself, when it was first made public, it was officially designated GRID, gay-related immunodeficiency, which... yikes.
Yeah.
Like, even with hindsight, that's just yikes.
I know, yikes. Totally. I remember I must have been around this time, actually. I was a bit later, maybe the late 80s. I was very young. I remember what house I was living in, and we lived there till 88, so I was probably around 7 or 8 years old, and there was a documentary on the ABC on, like, it used to be the afternoon show with James Valentine, and it just used to play, like, you know, a bunch of kind of ABC type shows from like 4 till or 3 till 6 or something. Anyway, they had this documentary on there about this kid who had contracted HIV from a blood transfusion. And so they went through this, I guess it was kind of educational for kids, which, and it was pretty early on really when you think about it, just about how, like, it wasn't the kind of thing that you could catch from touching someone, or do you know what I mean? Like, and without going into too much detail about how you actually can get it, they're just kind of, I guess they're trying to debunk some of that fear factor around it. And I never, ever forgot it. I felt so sorry for this kid, but it was really helpful, I think. I think a lot of people... Like with the, what we're going through now, there was a lot of misinformation, you know, like people spread a lot of misinformation about, you know, I mean, I remember kids saying at school, don't touch such and such, you'll get AIDS. Like it was, do you know what I mean? Like it was like this really.
Yeah. And, and that stuff like persists to this day. That's why I consider like my role in like Red Ribbon Reviewers as passive as it may be ultimately, to be something that's needed, because like even to this day there's still so much very like hate motivated misinformation out there. So as far as like, you know, AIDS is, you know, God's retribution against the gays, which
the gays, I guess I wonder, like, if I didn't have that so young, I wonder. A bit of apple in a bowl.
A whole lot.
Just cutting. It just goes to show you the things that we teach our kids. You know, about everything, about racism, about life. You know, it really stuck with me my whole life. And it's weird to think about now, showing my kids a documentary about kids with AIDS, but I kind of now I think, you know, how important it is that kids do get the right message about things. Everyone does.
Especially since, like, that classic line, you know, how am I going to explain this to my kids?
Yeah.
Is like one of like the biggest dog whistles for, like, I'd much rather never have to admit that such things even exist. Because I don't care.
Exactly. But, yeah, but that's not really particularly helpful.
No, it is.
And I'm, you know, I struggle to find the right way to talk to my kids about coronavirus or, you know, COVID-19 without it being scary. But without giving them some glossy or just ridiculously ill-informed, you know, idea about it. Like it's difficult, but yeah, anyway, there you go. I just thought I'd bring that up.
No, it's very interesting. And like, I first like discovered this play and the miniseries while I was in high school. In fact, like, only like a few months after I first discovered that YouTube video about this, I actually discovered that we were studying millennium approaches for drama. Oh. And I actually, and like, we actually like acted out scenes from it. I got to act out that scene with Roy Cohn at like the switchboard where he's saying like, I wish I was an octopus. Like that scene where I just got to just like yell at some bystanders playing Joe. And like, it's just like, admittedly, that is part of the reason why I do love Roy Cohn, like the character in this and Al Pacino's portrayal of him, because it's like, it's such a perfect villain role, but it's not like over embellished to get that point across. Like, he, like, as purple as the prose is consistently, he still feels like a genuine person. And when it gets to, like, you know, him,
say that, yes.
When it gets to him, like, succumbing to the later stages of AIDS, his visions of Ethel Rosenberg, which, damn. And like, even the moment, like, that final moment of just, like, yes, I tricked you! Like, as, like, awful as that kind of is on its own, it's also impossible for me not to laugh at it.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, with like Ethel Rosenberg explaining just like, you know, the acid green star made out of her hate that shines in the sky, and her like, but both through like singing, you know, that Yiddish lullaby to to Roy, as well as like speaking through Lewis to give like final rites, to sort of like, you're a vindictive bastard, and I've just realized that is that I can't do that. I need to forgive, which itself is kind of like, you know, an amazing thing, because like, fucking hell, I can't forgive Roy Cohn for what he's done. Like, you know, between like, you know, advising Reagan, advising Trump as his lawyer, his place within like McCarthyism and the Red Scare, as well as his place with the Lavender Scare, which was basically McCarthyism but focused on LGBT employees of the government, which I can't get into any further, but let's just say I have certain vested interest in that never happening again.
Yes. I'm not gonna I don't want to bring it all. Let's go back. So I think I've sort of, I don't know, I think I've covered pretty much
everything. I have one last thing to bring up, and that's probably like the most obvious part of this thing, the multiple casting thing, where it's like one actor plays multiple roles. It starts off on a note where it has to insist, like, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it, with Meryl Streep as the rabbi, which is a sentence that is amazing all on its own. But just, like, it has, because it does that, it has a similar effect to, like, The Wizard of Oz, or even stuff like, where, like, the fact that you do have, like, you know, multiple parts played by the same actor allows you to read a little bit more into it, like, sort of, like, for instance, how Emma Thompson, who plays the Angel of America, also plays Pryor's nurse, which could play into a sort of like Wizard of Oz. Like, I had this, actually, to it, I had this dream and you were there and you were there. And like, there's heaps of that all over the place. But I think like the one bit of double casting that like really kind of like latched onto me is one that like you could easily miss if you weren't actively looking for it. It's the scene where Lewis is with the Leather Daddy out in the park, and the Leather Daddy is played by Justin Kirk, who also plays Pryor. So it's like that whole scene is basically like Lewis wanting the same connection, I guess, that he had that he had with Pryor before he got the illness, like, to the point where like he says like, oh, the condom broke, no, infect me, like he wants that proximity to him again. They feel he's lost since that illness, and just like that one moment, like, even though like there's so much espousing on like, you know, being able to choose life in the face of like potentially, you know, disastrous and horrific and just dark as fuck things to come, just like that one moment like says so much about like the gay experience in conjunction with the AIDS crisis, like not just to do with like, you know, like the government non-attention and like needing, you know, a spokesman to like yell at everyone, this is a fucking plague, for anyone to actually start listening, but also like how it affects like the gay community within itself, connections with other people. It's the kind of thing that like this film, like this play and miniseries, does amazingly well with a really deft touch, while other stuff like, off the top of my head, Rent in all its incarnations just didn't really.
Right? Yeah, no, totally. I agree. Yeah. In all its different, yeah. I saw that actually at the, and I hate musicals, except for obviously Disney ones, which you had to actually point out to me. And I'm not a fan of the theater. I can't handle it. And I went and saw Rent and was very underwhelmed. I don't know why I went, but I did, and it was very underwhelming.
Yeah, Rant is the kind of whether you're watching it at the theater or you know watching the movie, it really does feel like it's taking 525,600 minutes to get through.
It does. I think I fell asleep for a little bit in the middle of it, actually.
Understandable. So, I guess we're up to our final thoughts on this whole thing.
Yes. Well, I think it's pretty clear. Loved it. Have always loved it. Been a big part of my life. It was great going back there again. Have immense respect for the playwright and for the director and the actors. I think it's a really important piece of art, to be honest. And everyone.
This is like required viewing. Yeah. Like admittedly, this might be a hard sell for the people who just go like, "Ooh, gay's icky." But this, like, considering like how well every single character, even Roy Cohn, at the end of the day, is humanized, I could potentially see this like crossing that boundary.
Yeah.
And well, just like on top of everything else. You know, it sounds great. It looks great. The acting, totally. The casting is like some of the best I've ever seen.
Yes.
And especially considering like what Tony Kushner would go on to do cinematically after this, like co-writing Steven Spielberg's Munich, teaming up with him again to write Lincoln. And the two of them are also working on a new adaptation of West Side Story.
Oh my God, really?
I'll admit I'm quite curious about.
Yeah, I'm curious about it for sure.
And just, yeah, it is an amazing miniseries. Like, it says so much in such a relatively compact space, and it's just sparkling at every moment. It is amazing. I really could talk about it forever.
No, it's the same. And I just sort of thought, if you're still in lockdown or you are like us, probably facing going back into lockdown at any moment, then pull up your seat in front of this one. It'll kill some time for you for sure, in a good way.
Abso-friggin-lutely.
Ah, cool. Well, thanks for suggesting that. I haven't started the other ones, but I'll try and get onto them over the weekend, and I'll hit you up.
Oh, righto. Oh.
Oh, well, you know, may as well, whatever.
Okay, all right.
We're looking for the end of next week, but we'll play it by ear anyway.
All right, cool.
You're going as well. All right, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too.
See you later.